Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
Kelly, against all odds, the babyface tag team has the advantage in War Games on the men's side coming into tomorrow night's Survivor Series. Are you shocked? And what do you make of it?
I would be shocked, but they've done this a couple of times in NXT in the last couple of years. And I don't remember if it was last year or the year before that both teams with the advantage, including the babyfaces, lost. It's a brave new world in pro wrestling, apparently. But yes, that's I did expect the Usos to win here, but I suppose Usos losing in a way because of Sami Zayn does make as much or more sense.
And I think this can set up Sami Zayn doing something to offset the advantage that they're supposed to have. I think Sami showed, you know, he's going to stay loyal to the bloodline despite Kevin Owens planting some seeds earlier that maybe he shouldn't, and even at ringside trying to talk him out of it. But, you know, you still have the intrigue of during the match, does Sami get distracted by Kevin Owens in a way that he shouldn't, that then kind of takes away the advantage? Well, that would work if the heels had the advantage, so that actually takes away that storyline. So I'm trying to think, if the faces have the advantage throughout, I mean, it's just going to make the heels look strong. I mean, now that I'm kind of playing it out, I mean, how do they tell that story without just having the baby faces? I guess the baby faces just dominate the heels every time they have a 2-on-1 advantage, but that takes away the heat spot for when the heel runs to the ring to even the odds, which is normally a baby face. So, I mean, there's obviously, as I'm like struggling to even come up with the booking scenario that makes sense. That's why they usually, historically, have had the heels, quote, win the coin toss or win the qualifying matches most of the time. I do like that they shook it up and have one of each on the show, if I'm recalling the women's situation correct from earlier in the week.
Yeah, it's not obvious, but I didn't think there was going to be a decent way to do it in the last couple of years, and it was kind of fine. But it was kind of fine because they'd have somebody overselling the action they'd been in, kind of off to the side. And that's sort of, I think that's kind of how they got away with it, with baby faces having the advantage. One of them would be selling, and then they'd have an equal number of people doing the stuff. Obviously not when it was 2-on-1, but as the match got deeper, I want to say that was kind of it. You also kind of have it would help if the heels have a monster in there early. But it really feels it's kind of Roman and everybody else. So do you trot Roman out there right away? It seems like you save him for the final spot. But it wouldn't seem like the baby faces should be able to overwhelm the heels if Roman goes out there early.
Yeah. What do you make of Sammy and KO and Jay listening in and Sammy lying despite being shown live on national television with the camera 3 feet away from him, having a conversation with KO that he denied having to Jay? I overall like that scenario. And then I like that they went back to it with Jay talking to Jimmy. Apparently, we didn't have a microphone proving it, but Cole speculated or assumed that he was filling him in on Sammy and Kevin Owens having a talk. The bloodline dynamic with Kevin Owens now in the mix as of last week has so many moving parts, and it's so fun. And Sammy continues to be so effective and such a blast in the role that he's in. And Kevin Owens, of course, has amazing chemistry with Sami Zayn. Just talk about what you like or what you're hoping for out of this scenario.
I, too, like the scenario a lot, other than the things you already did say. Like, Sammy knew there was a camera right there, and he still lied about it.
Yes.
And it's fine if you want to commit to the idea that the camera's not really there. We're just seeing a fictionalized scenario. But then if the announcers say, oh, well, this happened and we all saw it, then you don't get to claim that anymore. So yeah, that part of it was no good, but I do like, how do you keep Owens and Zayn apart? And how, when you keep wedging them together, does it continue to feel fresh? I don't know how that is, but mm-hmm. we're going to be talking about Owens and Sami Zayn on NXT 8 years back in like 2 weeks, because that is when the debut happens. And it just, you keep going back to this, but I don't know why you wouldn't, because the two just make magic together. So every time you think that this Bloodline story is kind of running out of steam, they inject life into it in an interesting way. And here we are again. And I shrug my shoulders like, yeah, I wouldn't change the title now. I wouldn't switch anything now. This is all working.
Yeah. The Sami KO history, it'd be interesting to see a graphic representation of their careers over time when they were interacting with each other as rivals or aligned, and what percentage of each of their careers that makes up. And there's a reason they keep going to it. You know, I mean, the in-ring chemistry, the back and forth micro chemistry is fantastic, and it's great seeing them in a prominent role. Sammy's just such a blast to watch these days. And, you know, Jay is being leaned on for a big part of this too, because he has to be leery of Sammy in a way that comes across as heelish, but also somewhat justified. And that balance is there in the way that they're telling the story. Like, if you're a fan, you're like, yeah, I kind of get why Jay doesn't trust Sammy and is jealous of the dynamic that he has with Solo and being brought into the family when he's not Blood. But you like Sammy, so you're still rooting against Jay. And I don't know that there's a lot of wrestlers who have the acting chops, I guess, that Jay does to pull off the subtleties of this. And he's really adding to this too. And Solo is good just being stoic. And Jimmy is good sometimes just seeming like he's kind of messing with both of them at once.
Yeah, when Jimmy was out for a while, we found that Jay really was kind of an unsung star. All the things that were asked of him on his own, it just seems like they found something in him that they just keep wanting to use. And I still just, I've mentioned this before. I probably mention this every time I'm on, because there's always such a heavy Uso presence every time that I watch. But it seems, what was I going to say about Jimmy and Jay? I don't remember now.
Kelly, we're live.
I know. I'm thinking of so many things that's going on with Jimmy and Jay. And
let me ask this. What do you think is going to happen at War Games? What story are they going to tell that brings this long-term storyline to another chapter?
That's a good question, because it just you've got so many ways to go here next. This seems tailor-made to be the kind of match that the heels need to lose to move somebody to that next level, to be that next major challenger. And certainly that's what they've done a lot in NXT, where they've had the champion, normally the heel champion, but they've done both, actually that main star be the one who has to eat the pin. They don't like to have Roman get pinned for just any reason, and they've protected him more than just about anybody else as a champion. But this might be the time that you do that. So I guess I've been thinking that the faces were going to go over here, and if that means Sheamus or KO goes over and is the next major threat to Roman. And we've seen some of both of those already, but or Drew, but we've seen that recently. I thought that would be what it was for. If the heels win here, I don't know what the next step is. Unless you're really just trying to get to more of Jay versus Sammy. And it's not, it's still working, but I wonder how long people will accept it without those two coming to blows.
Yeah. When I watch this, I keep waiting for the moment when I think they're going too slowly and they're going to, that they're stretching it out too long. And there's just so many things that can play out that are going to be real fun to see play out, and keeping everyone interested in it as they time it out to coordinate with holidays, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, whatever they have in mind. There's just so much that they can do, but they've got to find a way to fill the spaces in between those big points in the progress. So I don't know if they're going to do War Games. I mean, I don't know if they're going to – I mean, it could just be as simple as, you know, Jimmy and Sammy having misunderstandings, and it just sort of, you know, adds a little fuel to the flame of tension and distrust, but there's no major angle. I don't expect a major angle, but – maybe it gets to the point where Roman just tells those two fight it out, you know, and they do a Sammy-Jay match at some point, not because Sammy's not in the bloodline, but more just to have, you know, quote, as Roman might put it, which would annoy Jay, have family fight out their differences. So we'll see. You know, I'm intrigued. Let's pause and introduce ourselves here, though, and get to more on this than other topics from the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, November 25th. 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, and I'm joined by Kelly Wells from PWTorch.com and the PWT Talks NXT, PW Torch Daily Cast, and also NXT 8 Years Back, a VIP exclusive. Kelly, welcome to the show. How was your Thanksgiving?
It was pretty good. One sibling couldn't be there because of work. One couldn't be there for another reason, and one had to leave early. So it was actually kind of quiet. They were all saw them all on the phone. I'm Kelly Wells. Yes, you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk. Stop the presses. I remembered what I was going to say about the Usos. I love that Jimmy and Jay, despite being a long-form tag team, and have not been split up, I really like that they tell individual stories with them, really like that they don't have just a simple tag team gimmick, a tag team mentality, and they're just where it feels like the writing is just one person's words coming out of two different bodies. I just really like that they've continued to keep these guys separate, and I think that's what makes the tag team work more as a team, is them being two separate entities. And I think WWE at times has been really bad about having their fixed tag teams, just two guys with the exact same personality.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. Well, let's give out the phone numbers. It's a holiday weekend and we're light on callers on our switchboard. Even just people listening in, and that's expected. We'll probably go a little bit shorter than usual on this show. Well, we'll see how it goes. I mean, we've got Survivor Series tomorrow, so certainly plenty to talk about, including the return of Becky Lynch. You are invited if you're one of those listening to us here on Friday night right after SmackDown. Give us a call. Our phone number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. If you have any thoughts, any questions, any rants, any concerns, any disagreements with anything on the show, consider yourself invited. Again, that's 347-215-8558 and push 1 when you call. That'll flag you on our switchboard. You can also email the show at WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. Kelly, let's get into the other big deal on this show, which is Becky Lynch. She made her return, not a shock, that she was the surprise guest. What'd you think of her, or the surprise partner, I should say? What'd you think of how they reintroduced her? I have to say, for those who didn't watch live on Fox Network, they started about 10 minutes late because the college football game ran long. They went the full 2 hours because they need a 2-hour show for international distribution and all that. And I was thinking maybe they were going to shorten the show and then, you know, pad it out somehow for international distribution. But they went the full 2 hours. I bring that up because it felt like the Bayley segment with Damage Control at the beginning, it just felt truncated. Like, they just got right to it. You know, Belair comes out and it's boom, now she's coming out. And so there was a lot of buildup. There wasn't too much said. I'm not even saying that's good or bad, although I guess I'd like to hear, you know, it's always good to hear from Becky. And also, you know, how she came to agree to be part of the team and a little bit more from Belair. What do you think about the way that they did that?
Very straightforward. And there's something to be said for making us wait a little bit for a mission statement. But this is the episode that's supposed to be the hard sell for a pay-per-view tomorrow night. So I don't know. We did get a few words from her backstage later on, but I don't know. I didn't hate that they kept this very simple and just had her come down, and her music was really what this was about. I loved Asuka really selling that with the great big grin when she heard the music. Uh-huh. I just love everything on her face all the time. But yes, then they ran into the ring, and it was the 5-on-5 brawl. And I'm like, I've seen this a lot. I've seen a lot of this exact type of thing just to get us there. So I wouldn't have been sad by a little bit more of a segment here. They had a few matches to cover and things to promote, but it's not like you had to have these semifinal matches tonight. You can save those for next week if it's not going to be paid off at SummerSlam in any way. But I don't know whether I like this or not. It made me interested to see her follow-up, but it did seem a little odd that she wouldn't at least give us a few words with Survivor Series right there tomorrow night.
Yeah. I mean, Becky's going to be good in whatever she has. We have some emails on Becky's return too, which we can expand on our discussion there. And we're going to learn about her in the War Games match in terms of, you know, is it just straightforward, you know, vintage Becky Lynch, let's reignite the feud with Bayley, and that's what the match is all about. Are there other things at play? We can speculate, we can have our preferences, but the good news is for people who want to see her as a babyface, they got such a brief moment of that, and now for people who are lamenting her heel turn going way back and having to suffer through it for so long, even though she was all in on it and I thought it was entertaining, you know, fans like her too much. She's got to be a babyface at this point. And so we're going to get that. And boy, could SmackDown and WWE in general use her star power right now. You know, they're losing, you know, Cody and heck, Charlotte and Becky and Randy Orton. There's just been more subtractions than there are additions to make up for it. She really is going to help out in that regard. So she's a real help to the women's division. And tonight was the start of it. They didn't show too much of their hand, but tomorrow is going to be the big story. And by the way, we'll have our VIP exclusive post Survivor Series roundtable tomorrow. So everyone go VIP if you aren't already. And you can hear that show on Saturday night where we'll go into Survivor Series in depth for about an hour. Kelly, let's get to some phone calls and emails if we can here. And we're going to start with area code 708. 708, thanks for calling. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
Hector from Chicago.
Hey, Hector, you're one of our emailers, but good to hear from you. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Yeah, I was just happy that Becky came back. I was happy that Braun did not win the tournament. I really thought they were going to push Gunther and Braun, which they still are, but at least now he's not going to win the tournament, which I'm happy about. I was listening to what you guys were saying earlier, and it got me to thinking. I was wondering, what do you guys think if it's Owens and Sammy at WrestleMania, like one-on-one, and then at SummerSlam they do the tag team match for Sammy and KO against the Usos? Because I was thinking, like, how you guys mentioned their history and stuff, like WrestleMania is like the perfect setup, you know, with perfect video, like the backstory. And like after the last few years and last year's WrestleMania with how Owens and Sammy have been doing for the company, I feel like maybe that's something like they would want to cater to them as a thank you for everything they've done. And I feel like Sammy and Owens, like they've been saying that there's probably nothing that's going to top last year's WrestleMania. But I feel like them winning the titles, the tag titles, mm-hmm. and then them having the match at Mania, like those are the two things I could imagine that would top last year. So I feel like that's something that's possible because I feel like WWE would probably cater to them for that. like them having a match at Mania, and then at SummerSlam they go for a tag team titles.
Kelly, what do you think of that scenario?
Not the first time or the last time I'll say this, but with Sammy, there are always so many options. And there are options on both sides. And when he's a face, it's awesome, but you miss heel Sammy. And when he's a heel, he's awesome, but you miss face Sammy.
Yeah, totally.
He's just so good at it, and there are so many options. So he is one of the hardest guys to predict what's going to happen at WrestleMania just because all of his options are interesting. I mean, he did the celebrity match last year, and it's the match I remember most from WrestleMania. It really is. So, because he's all in on everything he does. I would not be surprised if that's where they head. It seems like, given the level of work he's done, tag team champion, even enough for him. On the other hand, the Usos tag team, I mean, those championships are ultra protected, just like Roman's. So beating the Usos at this point really does, winning those tag team championships right now means a lot more than historically it has at a lot of different times in this company. So I wouldn't be surprised to see that, but I wonder if I would be a tiny bit disappointed that was that's where he headed, rather than almost immediately into a feud with Roman. As for Sammy versus KO at WrestleMania, yeah, I'll take that as many times as you give it to me, and I think it's a good use of both of them.
Is there a chance Sammy is the one to end Reigns' reign? It's a common question on my podcast. What's your view of that? Do you think it's prudent to have Roman keep both belts for well beyond this storyline, because he can just be a generationally dominant long-term champion, and that'll sort of, like Lesnar's streak, you can turn that into a draw in and of itself the longer he holds the belt? Or is Sammy somebody who kind of might need to beat Roman to get everything potentially out of Sammy that you can, given how talented he is as a face or a heel, but in this case, probably as a face? I mean, almost assuredly as a face, although Roman might turn babyface at some point because fans are starting to cheer him. But is Sammy worth cashing that chip in of having Roman's title reign come to an end and Sammy have a run? Maybe short, maybe Roman regains it, maybe not. Your take, Kelly.
For me, he is worth it. It's weird putting anybody over Roman at this point. And that's exciting. It's exciting to have a champion that's so big that you can't imagine who's going to beat him. Because historically that made wrestling work. But I think that he is. And I'm fighting myself here because I don't know if I'm crazy saying this, but Sammy is somebody who, when he's a babyface especially, he is defined by losing and then getting a hill to climb and getting that journey back. Road to redemption is the wording that they used over and over and over ad nauseum 8 years ago in NXT. I am watching that journey right now, where he's been beaten by a few different guys and he has to beat all of them one by one by one before he finally gets his championship match with Adrian Neville. So I think that they can do it. And I also don't think he would win his first match. But maybe that's just because I've seen the Sammy story play out so many times that I kind of know how it goes.
Kelly, Hector also brought up the tournament and that Braun didn't win. And yet they did an angle, which certainly points towards a Braun-Gunther match. But it's not going to be a result of this tournament. Did that surprise you? What did you think of the story they told with Braun and Ricochet? What do you make of incorporating the social media comments from Braun into it and then having them unite in the end with Braun helping Ricochet up after Ricochet beat him thanks to distractions and interference from Imperium?
I mean, maybe Braun and Ricochet are your wacky tag team that defeats the Usos.
oh, my God.
I mean, they could do it. I actually really liked that they did this, that they had the moment where where he, like, they could almost get away with saying that this was an angle all along and not just Braun saying something stupid.
I'm starting to wonder.
Yeah, it really, Braun, yeah. Right. Exactly right. I too, like Hector, I'm glad that Braun did not win this tournament. He's not my thing, really. But my favorite Braun is the one that's being a little whimsical. Like, my favorite Braun moment is still actually when he won the tag team championships with Nicholas. I thought that was hilarious. And I don't think enough of him as a major threat for any of his other moments to be my favorite Braun moment. I like the idea of he and Ricochet being these strange bedfellows, but maybe you could still kind of use a little bit of that real life stuff where Braun has to keep reminding himself that Ricochet's his running mate. Kind of like the episode of the Simpsons. There's always a Simpsons episode where, where Nelson has to back up Milhouse against some guys in another town. And he says, I would never hang out with him normally, even as he's beating up the guys. I think that could be a fun dynamic. And what did this give us? This gave us Ricochet versus Santos Escobar. And I'm all about that. That should be all kinds of exciting.
Hector, back to you for any follow-up on those topics or something else.
Just two more things. I'm ready to see Bray wrestle. I mean, I'm always going to support him. I'm a fan of his, but I do want to see him wrestle already. And then I was so hyped when I saw Rousey and Shayna beating him up in the hallway backstage. And then they got on the mic, and my excitement got lesser and lesser. And then Shotzi came out, and Shotzi was taking it to both of them by herself. And I was like, oh, they're going to ruin everything already. But, yeah, like, I was so hyped to see. Like, I want them to be a tag and just run through the division. But it was a rough start tonight with them.
Kelly, what'd you think of the Ronda Baszler connection, the attack, the way they did the storyline? It's a formula we've seen before where babyface gets beat up backstage before a tag match. It's 2-on-1. And then the babyface who got beat up comes out and comes to the rescue and evens the odds. I will say I thought Shotzi's interview backstage was good. I thought that she removed some of the I don't know how else to describe it, but it was just too much of certain inflections. And I thought she was believable and, you know, kind of it's such a corny phrase for Cole to say, but the ballsy badass who never backs down from a fight. I mean, it did fit her, that description and the way that he carried himself in the promo. So pros and cons to Shotzi, Raquel, Rhonda and Shayna, especially in light of how you've seen Shayna used in NXT and where you think she might be going now with Rhonda.
Shotzi can always be kind of a lot when she's in early stages of a babyface development. When she was in NXT and she gave her first couple of promos, I was just thinking of the director saying, oh, okay. Let's pull it back like 50%. She's a lot. She likes what she does. That much seems clear. I thought this was actually the best promo I've seen from her. Like it's the best one I can remember. I thought that it was, it's not, and none of it's going to make me believe she has a chance in this match, but I think that they're doing a pretty good job. I actually think they've done a pretty good job of rehabilitating the women's division as a whole. And part of that has unfortunately been with more segments and fewer matches because they're not calling attention to who's losing match after match after match all of the time. But it just seems like it's been a little more strengthened, that there's a little more something there. So I thought that worked.
I agree. They took a match that felt like it wasn't Survivor Series worthy, and I thought tonight, you know, brought it up a level. I mean, it's still not necessarily PLE worthy compared to, you know, typical in terms of the buildup of the challenger and just the history of the feud. But this show helped. You know, it got me past the idea that this is just, you know, completely out of place on the show. Now it feels a little bit more in place.
Yeah, and you can run Brock Lesnar versus Hardcore Holly when you've already got a Royal Rumble on the show.
Yep, that is the go-to example. Yep.
It's always my example. And then, these guys can – I think they get away with that here. So, and as for the horsewomen, the UFC horsewomen, the fighter horsewomen, I like the two of them together. Theoretically, Ronda still is who she is when she grabs a mic.
Her face paint makeup choices are hilarious. I don't know what she's thinking. I don't know what her – is she in on it or does she think it's cool? I don't know.
Yeah, it works on the heel level of, well, I certainly don't like it. That's all I can say. It's bad. It's not good. I don't want to see it. That on that level, it works.
Ronda's not the type of character you want to be snickering at because of her obliviousness. And there's a little bit of that with her makeup as a babyface and now as a heel, where you're like, does she think that's cool? Is that like, well, what's going on there? It's a little distracting. So, I mean, I would vote against it, but it works better as a heel for sure.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know. I've never understood it. I just learned to try to ignore it when it's there. But Shayna, for her part, I think she's who I'd want to see beat Ronda. I don't know if they're going to split these two. I'm a big, big Shayna backer, and it seems like this has built her up in a meaningful way, and maybe a chance will come.
Yeah, yeah. Hector, back to you. Again, any follow-up or anything else you want to bring up?
No, I agree with the Ronda. Not the Ronda, the Shayna. I'm a big Shayna fan, too. And then lastly, before I go, I thought the Thanksgiving thing with Dom was awesome, and Michael Cole being mad at him tonight was awesome.
Yes.
So I thought that worked yesterday as well. But, yeah, that was it. Thanks for taking my call. And happy late Thanksgiving, guys.
Yeah, hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thank you, Hector. As a Viking fan, things got off to a nice start this weekend, Kelly.
Oh, yes. Wouldn't want to just win a game easy. Wouldn't want to do that. We either lose a blowout 9-2 and we've outscored our opponents by what? 4-5
Yes. It's like, yes. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if we hadn't outscored our opponents based on how badly we lost to.
We 8-2. We had not outscored our opponents. We were under. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, yeah, but you know what? 9-2 is hard in the NFL. I mean, I don't care what you say. Cause how many seasons have you rationalized, you know, a 3-7 record going, oh, it's only 4 plays away from being 8-2. It's like, yeah, well, we made those plays. The Vikings made those plays this year, and that counts for something. That means you have a quarterback who in a clutch situation makes a good throw, makes good decisions, a wide receiver who is one of the greatest pro athletes in the world at the moment, a star running back, and on and on. You know, I mean, it's like those things don't happen 9 out of 11 times by accident. So that was a fun way to spend part of Thanksgiving.
Yes, and I think never has a head coaching change seemed to loom so large over our team.
It's nice having across the board in Minnesota pro sports like head coaches where I'm just not like. I'm pretty happy with things right now. And certainly the new Viking coach off to a really cool start. Okay. So, the more Hector talked, the more it struck me that a lot happened on the show. You know, I mean, you brought up the Bray Wyatt thing. And then, you know, obviously it's the go home show right before Survivor Series, but even the Bray thing, he said he's ready for Bray to wrestle. Bray's entrance takes a long time. They're really making that seem like something you experience on TV. Now come to the arena to experience it, help sell tickets, get his character over. I did start to get a little vibe. I got a little feeling tonight of, all right, Bray, you're talking about how much we think about you and you're a babyface and you might be thinking we think about you more than we actually do. You know, can you get to your point and can we get to a fight? Obviously the LA Knight thing is at least in play and it is, I think, an intriguing mystery. You know, what is going on with the attack? Is it Bray, some alter ego, some split personality? Is it somebody else in his world? So what have you thought of the Bray Wyatt character as it's come along? The LA Knight feud, another NXT guy, getting his character back, no name change, from what he was in NXT, and being in a really high-profile feud with Bray. I mean, I did not have this on my 2022 bingo card.
Nor I. I would have made a lot of guesses before I thought that they'd go to this. And part of that is because it doesn't seem like either one is in a position where you want them to lose a fairly good-sized feud. But LA Knight is the kind of guy who can talk himself right back to the position he was in the case that he loses. And that happened on NXT a couple of times after some sizable losses. So no problem there.
Yeah.
I, too, am very, very into the attacks. The mind goes to obvious places. I mean, maybe Bo Dallas shouldn't seem obvious because the guy did retire from wrestling. But the mind goes there and to places like that. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm supposed to assume anything, if I'm supposed to assume that this is an alter ego or not. And that's certainly in play. We know that about Bray. And I think he's still more or less getting away with stuff. The biggest question I actually have is on the length of that entrance. I think he's definitely getting to the point where this is very cool for the live audience, but it does kind of become death after a while, sitting at home waiting for somebody to get to the ring. It's not as cool at home. And my favorite example there is when Hogan returned on SmackDown and he just stood in the ring.
Yes.
And smiled and soaked in cheers for like 9 minutes. I turned the channel because I was so annoyed, came back like 3 minutes later and nothing had changed. And my friend Bobby and I were laughing so hard we couldn't breathe. We were just like, this is horrible. This is dead air.
Is Hogan wanting to create a moment and sensing he could, and it wasn't for everyone.
No
question about that. Yeah. All right, cool. Well, let's try another call here. It's a Skype international block call, something like that. If you heard a tone here, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. If you called us and pushed one, go ahead and say your name. We'll confirm if it is you. You do not want to talk to us? All right. I'm going to hang up on you, and then you'll know this was you. Feel free to call back. All right. Let's go to Kyle in Baltimore. Kyle, you are up next. Thanks for calling. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it in the family, so that. So how was yours?
Really good. Yep. What's on your mind about SmackDown?
So the seven with Becky came out was the best thing ever. I was like, okay, yeah, it had to be Becky. It made sense for it to be Becky. People were saying it was Sasha. Even I was thinking that it can't be Sasha because it doesn't make any sense. Because, yes, it's in Boston. Yes, it's our hometown, but it made zero sense for her to be Sasha Banks because of the fact that she had no connections fully within the storyline they were telling with Bianca and Bayley. So that, so I don't know where that came from. It had to be Becky. I'm glad it is Becky, and it makes this match 10 times better than, and at least in my eyes, than whatever to do with the Bloodline. Also, I said last week, for me, I could care less really about the Bloodline versus the Brawl and Bruises, because I felt like it just came out of nowhere. It just came together for no reason, just because. And now and with the women, it has been more longer, and I've been more intrigued because of has the storyline with Bayley, Bianca been great? No, I think it's been, I've been all that entertained with Bayley at all when she came back, but within this match and now where we have with Becky Lynch in this match now is more interesting. I get more excited for this match even more. And what do you think about the entire thing now? Am I still my own opinion of this, saying that this is the best story type of match? I think both. I'll say this. I'd say both War Games matches will be fun, but I'm just more intrigued and more interested in the women's match than the men's, but that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, Kelly, how about you? Both you personally, and how do you think you know, stepping back, WWE has done in terms of creating intriguing five-on-five matchups for the men and the women. How do they compare? And then how have they done in terms of building it up over time?
So they're very different, because with the women, we are excited to see these two teams against each other. And with the men, it feels like the baby faces are almost plug them in. What we're intrigued to see is the bloodline and what they do, the bloodline against itself. So the two are built very differently.
One thing I want to say about that too, I'm sorry. One thing I just thought about as well,
yeah, go ahead.
About that, because to me, it also feels like it's about Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and Roman Reigns is still the Universal Champion who's not feuded with anyone either. So like, feels like, again, Roman's like in the complete background. It's about Sami Zayn, what to do. It's all about what Sami Zayn is doing. That's what everyone else is always talking about. It's always like, what Sami Zayn's going to be doing. Talk about Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn versus the Usos. Where is Roman Reigns as a double champion? So that's a big problem I have with this situation. That's why I could care less about this thing with War Games with the men, because it's about, it's not really nothing there to sink my teeth into anyway, but that's it for that.
And for me, what I'm expecting out of this is for Roman to come out of it with some sort of feud. I think that the next if he is to have a match at Royal Rumble, I think that we will find out who the identity of that person will be through this match. So the fact that he's not in a feud now, necessarily a solo feud, doesn't bother me as long as he comes out of this one. And I think I'm talking myself into the baby faces winning this and somebody scoring the pin on Roman.
Interesting. Okay. Kyle, back to you.
This entire thing was, it was fine with the main event. Like I said, it just came together out of nowhere, out of thin air, or whatever. I think, both matches will be fine. I was more with women. With Shotzi and Ronda, I guess Shayna too. I think this is kind of why I'm glad that she's back and probably going to be on SmackDown before, because I'm watching this, the women's division has been a terrible thing. So, and another thing too, why did they save Becky for tonight? Why not say it was Becky on Monday? It made no sense to me. I thought that was just right. And, I also thought that she was going to cut a promo in the ring, not backstage. So that's the other thing. Mm-hmm. They said that she's going to cut a promo, I thought, okay, it was going to be in the ring, but she didn't do that. So again, yep. They didn't announce her on Monday? I'll never understand that. She's about to be on SmackDown moving forward, which is a good thing, because Ronda has absolutely have no one credible for her to feud with at all. And at least, because at least Bianca has Rhea Ripley as option number one right away. If Alexa turns heel, see, there's Alexa. So there's people for Bianca to face. There's no one for Ronda to face. So moving forward, where you see Ronda's title run, and how will you see Becky's involvement into it if she remains with SmackDown?
Yeah. Thanks, Kyle. I wonder if at some point. Well, I mean, there's a lot. They're not going to do a roster shakeup of the roster split before WrestleMania. I don't think. Maybe they would at the start of the year, but. So a couple of things Kyle brought up there. One, I want to go back to what he said about Becky and her appearing on this show rather than being revealed earlier. And if you think that was good to sort of have all this build up and then 24 hours beforehand have the social media buzz and people watch and be excited about it, as opposed to having her, I mean, I think the argument would be if she came out 7 days ago, well, now it's 7-day-old news, 8-day-old news by the time it happens. I did think it was a little sneaky of Cole to say, we're going to hear from Becky later. And yeah, it was just a backstage promo. It wasn't false advertising, but maybe slightly sneaky. What do you think, Kelly?
Yeah, I, of course, thought there was going to be more of that, even though I thought it would be weird to play her music again and then get the diminishing return on the having her music played like twice in the span of an hour. So I don't know. I still don't know. Because you could have done this on Monday, sure. You also could have saved this for tomorrow night. But it's kind of been the worst kept secret that they have. So I guess why keep that bullet in the chamber? Just use her name to maybe draw in some people who are on the fence. Yeah, I don't know if I've got more on it than that.
How about just going forward? They've got Ronda, they've got Becky, they've got Bianca Belair, Rhea Ripley's getting momentum. You know, Charlotte at some point you expect back. Where does Becky fit in, and what's the trajectory for Ronda's title reign? Becky, Ronda doesn't feel, you know, talking about Sami KO, I'm going to that a lot. Becky, Ronda, I'm not sure if that is going to feel fresh enough to go back to, or if fans of Becky think there's unfinished business there because the roles were backwards. What do you think?
I think, actually, because the roles are reversed, that they might be able to get away with this. I don't know about right away, but maybe this is a WrestleMania match. I don't know. Ronda's beaten so many people so decisively. It's not easy to figure out who you place into that match. But I suppose I was coming away from this segment thinking that Becky was going to be a major opponent for her. And I guess I must not have thought that was too stale, because I didn't find myself totally hating the idea.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Kyle, back to you. Do you have any follow-up or anything else you want to wrap up with?
Yeah, this is, I go with the whole Ronda Becky thing, and how, I mean, I just felt like, to me, and I heard a lot of people saying that, you know, heard that Becky will come back during a Survivor Series at during the Ronda Shocking Mouth match itself. I was like, well, that could be fine too, but it just, I think the end result is that I think this will end up happening for WrestleMania in general. I don't know how they're going to, I don't know how each story is going to be, but it'll be Becky and Ronda and Charlotte and Bianca, but how they're going to tell each story headed into WrestleMania for both matches will be interesting, because Ronda hasn't done any, it's not all that interesting on the microphone, and Becky's great. She could do the best she can that she can of whoever she's feuded with, because it depends who Becky's feuded with. It will make Becky more excited to be feuding with that person, but if it's someone like Ronda who's not all that interesting on the microphone and isn't really all that great in the ring either, it'll be kind of a hard thing for Becky to try to get fans to get excited about it, even though it's her and all that stuff. So that's what I'm be intrigued about heading into the next few months with the dispute. That's the direction they're going in. So that's it. Thanks for a call. That's it. Bye.
Great. Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Anything you want to add to that, Kelly?
No, I think I'm pretty well covered on it. It seems like we are somewhat in agreement on whether this will work or not.
Cool. All right. Our number, if you're joining us in progress here, is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. If you call and you want to be on the show, push 1 on your keypad, and that flags you on our switchboard. All right, let's go to our next caller here. Brad in Florida, formerly of New York, is calling up. Brad, welcome. Your thoughts on SmackDown tonight. How was your Thanksgiving?
Hey, it was good, man. Thank you so much. Hope you guys had a good one, too. You know, the one thing, and please forgive me if you already touched upon this, because I'm a little late to the party. I just finished watching the end of SmackDown, but I had a major problem with the watching it tonight. Like, actually, with my DVR, it actually didn't record it. And then, strangely, I also have YouTube TV as well, and that didn't record it either, which I don't know if there was some sort of sports overlap or something. I mean, did you guys – I assume you guys just watched
yes,
it live.
Yes, there was.
But, yeah, that happened to me too. I thought it was going to pick up on the DVR once the college game was over, but it didn't. And so, yeah, something was up with the DVR recording. Go ahead, Kelly, with your.
Yeah, I was just going to let him know. A college football game went long, about 10 to 15 minutes-ish long. And when I was looking for SmackDown with my Roku remote, I literally, it wasn't even showing up at first. So I had to manually find my way to Fox, and I don't think that mine recorded it either. I think that it got confused, because the college game went long, and it seemed like whatever was supposed to trigger to make the show get recorded didn't happen.
Yeah, people who have a series recording and were hoping to watch on at a different time, I think are going to be disappointed because it seems like that did happen to others. I don't know if it happened on every cable and streaming service. But go ahead, Brad, with whatever else you want to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, not to harp on this, but that's going to really hurt their ratings for this week a lot because I know obviously there's a lot of people that watch it on DVR, whether they start 30 minutes late or an hour late or even, you know, later that night. But it's normally, obviously, the next block just starts. I mean, how often have you tuned to something and a game is ending, but it still says Leave It to Beaver, whatever the next show is going to be on. You know, Leave It to Beaver is probably not a good example, yeah. But it's really weird that it did that. And just like you guys, I was searching for it. It wasn't showing up on my Comcast, which is Xfinity. It wasn't showing up on YouTube TV. It wasn't showing up on anything. And I wonder if that is going to give them like a terrible number this week. I mean, who knows, but very strange. Regardless, I mean, the things that I was able to kind of see, I didn't see anything basically of the second hour until the ending of basically the Drew McIntyre-Sheamus match. I did see, thankfully, my recording somehow started just as Becky was coming in, and that was really good to see. And I did find it interesting, the interaction with Rhea Ripley specifically. And if Kyle brought this up just before me, please forgive me, but I assume Rhea is going to be a feud for her or something like that. And I wonder how that interaction will take place because, you know, Becky also went after Bayley. So I don't know how that's all going to be intertwined, but I found that very interesting. I also found it really cool, the Sami Zayn, Jey Uso interaction, and especially the way the show went off the air with Jay staring down Sami. Do you guys think that all comes to a head just tomorrow night and that is the end of the Sami Zayn bloodline experiment? Do you think it all ends tomorrow night?
Kelly?
I can't imagine wanting it to end yet just because it's produced so much intrigue. But I can't deny that a 5-on-5 in a cage wouldn't be the best place to – that would be the best place to end it, to move in a different direction with the story. Something big can and probably should happen within the confines of that cage. And I don't know if that means Sammy's out and that move moves forward, or if that just means that we find Roman's next challenger. But it's certainly, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, as good as the TV has been, that this has produced for this to be the end of this.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way it's the end of it. This does not feel like the verge of the climax of this feud. Vlad, what else? Brad, what else?
Did you guys think there was any, and I understand there was the only titles that were out there, but did you think there was any symbolism in the tag team belt being held by, you know, Kevin Owens and, you know, Sami Zayn and, you know, them kind of, you know, the whole thing with the actual belt itself? Do you think there was anything to read into that, or that was just the prop that they were using to kind of set up that segment, or you think it meant something more? Because obviously I think a lot of people feel like, you know, they're going to team up and they're going to be the team that takes down the Usos when this is all said and done. I almost feel like that's like too obvious at this point, but maybe it's so obvious they just go with it. You know, I'm just curious if you think there was any symbolism behind that.
What do you think, Kelly?
I think it's more about Owens trying to stir the pot within the bloodline. So, yeah, he's suggesting to Sammy something here to maybe get a reaction out of Sammy that is even the slightest bit positive in order to mess with the bloodline. And, yeah, if it lets our minds go wild thinking maybe these guys are going to team up, then all the better. But I think it was more about Owens trying to get that advantage any way he could. And he picked off who he thought was the weakest one in the herd, Sammy, and made him mess it all up.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's accurate. Brad, what else?
Yeah, I mean, I hope the pay-per-view tomorrow night exceeds my expectations, but I don't know, for me, it just, I guess because other than, you know, the U.S. titles on the line, and, you know, I do wish Gunther was in it somehow, but it feels more like a settled, it is a more settle the score pay-per-view than it is about, you know, anything major happening. Like a Clash at the Castle, I was like, wow, is Drew going to win the championship? You know, what's going to happen with Sheamus in the Intercontinental Championship? You know, a lot of these pay-per-views, you feel like you're going to potentially see something major happening. And I just, you know, obviously we're not having a Universal Championship or a WWE Championship match. We're not having, you know, anything along those lines. And I just feel like, you know, there's not much on the line other than a score to settle, which for me doesn't always do it. So I don't know. Are you guys particularly excited about tomorrow night? I mean, I do think the men's War Games match will be cool, and probably the women's War Games match will be cool also. But, you know, I'm not, like, you know, going gaga over this pay-per-view. I don't think right now it's something that I'm like, oh, my God, I can't wait to see this. Obviously, I'm going to watch it. But, I mean, is there something wrong with me, or do you guys kind of understand where I'm coming from with that? Like, to me, a score to settle isn't the most exciting thing other than the fact that something new is coming around the corner after that and hopefully something better. And I'm not that wrapped up in Damage Control and Bianca and Alexa. That ship has sailed for me. Finn Balor and AJ Styles, we've seen them for months and months and months. That doesn't really do it for me. And truthfully, you know, the Roman thing with the Bloodline versus these guys, I don't really feel like there is that much bad blood between them. Like, I really don't. Like, I don't feel like, you know, yeah, they did the thing to Sheamus's arm, and Drew obviously doesn't like Roman or the Usos, but I don't feel like it's something that's really been brought to a crescendo at this point where this has to be settled right now. And that's kind of the way I feel about tomorrow night, and I just want to know, like, maybe you could point out the bright side of this or why I should be excited, because I'm just not right now particularly excited about Survivor Series.
This is better than brand supremacy nonsense with, you know, heels and faces uniting to wear the same T-shirt for their brand and fighting each other. That was awful. But, you know, War Games shouldn't be something that comes off on a calendar and you wedge people in and create, you know, teams. I mean, War Games should be settling a score. The Royal Rumble makes sense to have on a calendar because it's, you know, not a grudge match. It's a concept match with high stakes. So I'm against that on principle. That said, it's War Games. It's going to be good. I mean, I'm looking forward to Sheamus and Reigns, hopefully, you know, having some moments. Kelly, how about you?
Yeah, having seen all of the NXT War Games, I can say that they are very, very good at telling stories in these matches. And interestingly, they've been far, far better at telling stories in the women's matches, whereas in the men's matches, it seems like a lot of the times they're just saying, okay, you can all do really cool spots, just do those, and you guys win in the end. That was very much kind of what they did with the men. So I always ended up finding the women's more memorable because they told really intriguing stories within them. So I know that they can use these to really go somewhere. I know what Brandon's saying here, what Brad is saying here about maybe there being something missing here, and I guess that's titles. I guess I'm not thinking about the titles all that much, and I'm interested in where these matches can take us. And as for the idea that it doesn't seem like anything big can happen, historically, when it doesn't seem like that, you get some major, major angle at the end of the show. And I am expecting one. He's right, of course, Brad is, about there being not a lot of bad blood in the men's match. But as I said to an earlier caller, the babyface men in this are props. They're just meat puppets. The story in that match is going to be inter-bloodline.
With Kevin Owens on the opposite side, and you know, adding to it, of course. But yeah, I mean, I don't think, you know, a month ago people were like, oh, the Brawling Brutes and Bloodline really need to settle their differences in a cage. That's been manufactured. But I'm looking forward to the matches. I mean, War Games is fun. It's got multiple chapters to it. You know, I'm always interested in the booking decisions of who they have come out first and who gets a 2-on-1 advantage and then, you know, what angles come out of it. But Brad, I mean, yes, I think we're looking, half of the attention on Survivor Series is the show. Half is what do they set up for after Survivor Series and with all the moving pieces. And yeah, I mean, Styles and Balor, it's nice that it's on the card. It's good wrestling. This is not an era when there's a shortage of really good wrestling matches. There's so much TV time to fill and so many talented, polished wrestlers being given time to do their thing. It's not really a rare commodity. So the novelty of that is less, and that's why, you know, wrestling, you know, ought to be, in order to draw maximum viewers and money, more storyline-driven and have a structure in which things of consequence are happening and wrestlers are on a journey and wrestlers you like are succeeding or having setbacks and you're following along like you would a sports team or a TV series or movie you're really into. And that's when, and that's at play in the War Games in terms of the fallout from it. I think most people are looking forward to seeing how things settle, in particular with Sammy, in particular with Becky coming out of this show. And really maybe what's next what's next for Ronda and Shayna? Do Shotzi and Raquel keep feuding with them? I assume they would because this feels new. So some things are going to continue and some people will just be reassigned and reset. Anything you want to add to that, Kelly?
No, I think that's largely the same. A couple of these things, yeah, especially it does seem like they're going to probably go to Raquel next as far as that championship. But yeah, I'm in agreement.
Yep. All right, Brad, back to you.
My last thing is just on Santos Escobar, who, you know, in NXT was one of my absolute favorites. Zelina was on commentary tonight, and I do like her. I think she's incredibly, you know, verbally gifted, and, you know, she's good. But for some reason, I did like Electra Lopez a little bit more with the group, just like kind of her stature and her, I don't know, she just had sort of a posture to her that really fit, in my opinion. But regardless of that, what do you think is, do you think there's anything big on the horizon for Santos Escobar? Because Delina was bringing up, you know, oh, the Bloodline, and we're going to take them out eventually. And
yep.
And I, you know, it's funny because when I look at Santos Escobar, just visually, he looks like his facial structure, like his hair, like he kind of looks a little bit like Roman Reigns to me, like a Hispanic version of Roman Reigns, but still nonetheless, they almost look like they could be, you know, relatives or something. Like they kind of look similar to me in a certain way. And Santos has a lot of confidence, and I'm not saying that that's the next feud for him right now or anything like that. I think that's a little far-fetched, but I just wonder, like, you know, Kelly, I know you're a big NXT guy. I'm wondering what you think is kind of the ceiling for him or where you see him going in the near future, because I think he looked really good. It's just kind of a shame that at least this crowd, I think they don't understand kind of what they're getting with him. Like, I think they don't know him and they're like, oh, this is, you know, some guy, whatever. He's got a mask and he's got a crew with him and whatever. But I don't think they know, like, what a great in-ring storyteller he is. I don't think they know, you know, a lot about him for the most part. And I just find him to be incredibly intriguing, and he just looks the part, and, you know, he looks really great out there. And I just wanted to kind of get your guys' thoughts on him, and that's about it for me.
Awesome. Really good questions and topics, Brad. Kelly, you're great to ask about Santos Escobar. What do you think so far of his so-called main roster, how they're framing him and pushing him, and what do you make of Zelina bringing up the Bloodline?
Yes, that was very interesting, and I don't know if that's just Zelina going into business for the group and trying to move him up the card. If Santos Escobar stands across the ring from Roman Reigns, it'll be clear that Santos has got a pretty decent size disadvantage there, but he's Yeah, he can have a good match with anybody. He raised the level of the Cruiserweight Championship very high. I mean, that was one of the best championship reigns. That was at the time, that was the best championship reign going on of anybody who had a title at the time. It just was, it was appointment television. It was my favorite part of the show when he was on. They have not gotten close to telling the story with them that they did in NXT. He showed up with the mask pretending to be a babyface. And I actually called his heel turn at the end of the Cruiserweight Championship tournament just because his music was so bland. I was like, this can't be it. This can't be all he is. This has got to be a setup for a heel turn. But I didn't predict that he was going to lose the mask on top of it and just have it be an entrance mask. I agree actually wholeheartedly with punting Electra Lopez and bringing in Queen Zelina here. Electra, she has that look. She has that gravitas as you describe, but at the time she had literally nothing else. If she gave one line in a scene, it was so dreadful, it would kill the scene. She was that bad on the mic. And her first few matches were all absolute trash. They were awful, awful, awful. They took her off TV for a significant amount of time. And she came back in a battle royal a month, 2 months, 3 months ago, I don't know. And they started saying, Electra Lopez eliminated, she's one of the favorites. I'm like, no, the hell she is not. She hasn't been on TV in 6 months. She had a lot to work on. So if they were going to call up these four as a group, it really, really would have been a disservice to the three guys who had been ready for many months, and she just wasn't ready. And I think if she had been brought up with them, she would have been extremely exposed. They have only just brought her back to TV, and she is light years ahead of where she was, both on the mic and in the ring. So I think that they are doing right by her by not bringing her up right away. And it's probably a bummer to her that she doesn't get to be part of this faction anymore, but I think that they are doing the right thing by the company and by her, by slow playing this.
What is Escobar's like a realistic high end scenario for him on the main roster? And can Legado del Fantasma be credible opponents for, say, Solo and the Usos? And can that lead to a Reigns-Escobar match? And if so, what are their roles in that match? Or is this just Zelina just trying to elevate the group by using them in the same sentence as Bloodline to make it seem like, you know, we're not mid-card guys?
Oh, I think that their height is probably his height is probably U.S. Intercontinental champion or possibly just contender. That's what I'm seeing. I don't want to be right about that. I really, really like him. But as long as he's on a program where Roman Reigns is the champion, I just can't even imagine a scenario where he becomes champion. Not when the championship has been that protected for that long. And could he visit that? I'm not sure. He couldn't do it right now and have any kind of credibility. They got to tell a long-form story with these guys. I actually thought they really did hit their stride as a babyface, like a mean and rough babyface group, but a babyface group nonetheless. I thought it was really working out. Not surprised that they brought him up as heels, but would have liked to see that babyface run continue. So I think that should they turn, or even if should they not, because sometimes they don't care, we could get some intergroup tussling here, but not too soon, or else they're just going to get flattened.
Yeah, yeah. Is there a size issue with Santos being a main event guy in WWE, or are there just so many different sizes getting pushes right now that's not really a concern?
It seems like it's going to be less of an issue. You would think that just because of the way that Triple H handled NXT, but I won't think that it's not an issue until it is definitively proven to me that it's not an issue.
Yeah. Like, Paul Levesque was not a champion of smaller wrestlers most of his career, but in NXT, I mean, those were the wrestlers available to him, and it didn't seem like he had to plug his nose to push them as top stars. But the reality is there's a lot more bigger wrestlers on the main roster, and, you know, it's a cosmetic business. It's a perception business. There's weight divisions in other sports. There's the believability factor. And when, you know, Ricochet and Braun were fighting tonight, I mean, that was a storyline. That was part of it. The floppy floppers versus the monster. What was the other adjective he used for himself? Giant and monster. So, you know, they turned that into a storyline. But you can't have that be the storyline if the heel's undersized. You know, that becomes a real challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that people would be stunned if they saw these guys next to each other. And they will realize why to that point they did not see them next to each other.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. In the inbox, an email came in from Zach in Texas, and I knew he'd write about Becky. He said the man has come back around for 11 long months. They had Becky trying to be a heel. For what? The crowd was so happy to be able to cheer for Becky. Why would you want to suppress reactions like that? Anyway, it's so nice to see Becky back to being Becky, down to the leather jacket. She's once again the biggest babyface in the company by a wide margin. The rest of SmackDown is basically irrelevant. The GOAT is back and all is right in the world. Kelly, review your thoughts on Becky being a heel. And is she the number one babyface in the company right now? Can that argument be made, especially with some wishy-washy characters in WWE right now, like, you know, Seth and Lashley and Theory? And it's just like, Cody, I think, is a, you know, clear-cut babyface, but he's not around. Riddle is, but he's cooled off since Orton left. So, you know, who's in contention for Becky for that spot now that Becky's back?
You know, when you said, is she the biggest babyface, I was going to say, well, no, and then immediately started cycling through them in my head and said, oh, my God, yes. I think maybe she is. Yeah, I mean, you've got Bianca. I don't know who's closer to her than Bianca, and I think that possibly that Becky's the one. I thought that her heel run, though ill-advised timing-wise, was good. I liked the matches. I liked her demeanor. I liked the work that she put in, and I liked the act. It just was, as the emailer stated, it was really suppressing fan reactions that just wanted to come out. It was sort of like that last false face turn for The Rock, where everyone was ready to cheer him, and they put him over in Deadly Game and then showed him to still be with Vince McMahon. And everybody was like, come on, we're ready. It's now. It's time to cheer The Rock. But I can't argue with the way they ended up doing that either. So, yeah, I thought it was a good 11-month heel run, whether it had to happen or not. And maybe because it did happen, people will be even more excited for this babyface run.
Yeah. I mean, they could use somebody who they just get behind and frame as a huge centerpiece and a huge centerpiece babyface unambiguously and line up heel opponents and just build a brand, build a show, build a championship around them to go along with Reigns and the Bloodline, you know, as such a strong, the gravitational pull of them is so great. You know, they are just clearly for the men, the center of everything with all the, you know, with all the men's major titles, tags and singles. So to have, you know, Becky come close to that. I mean, she's the best candidate. I take her over Ronda in that role. I take her over Charlotte in that role. Belair, I think, has had a mildly disappointing year in terms of, you know, blossoming into something more. I think Rhea Ripley has definitely grown, and the Dominic thing has been fantastic for her, but she's not there yet. So, you know, women's wrestling is as big of a deal as it's ever been in pro wrestling, and Becky is in her prime, and fans love her, and there's a lot of a lot of people out there who feel the way that Zach in Texas does. I do agree with that.
Yes, I think he's right. I think she is at the top. I can't gas up Becky as well as Zach in Texas can gas up Becky. He's got that market cornered. But yeah, she's the one. I think that she's the biggest babyface in the company.
Yeah, yeah. What else from SmackDown, Kelly, jumped out to you? We don't have to necessarily have a mega-long show here on a holiday weekend, but I don't want to miss out on anything. Is there anything you want to say about anything else on the show that were in your notes?
You know, I'm not sure that many of my notes have been untouched on. There were things going on, but they were all big enough to be worth talking about. I think the only thing we really didn't cover is Hit Row versus the Viking Raiders. And if you blink, you didn't catch that match. That is
when I discovered my DVR wasn't working because I accidentally changed channels. And I was, you know, a little bit behind because I rewind when I'm typing up the report on pwtorch.com. And then I accidentally hit the wrong button. I jumped ahead. That meant I lost my place in my fast forward rewind ability. So I just was like, oh, I'll go to the DVR and bring it up and fast forward to that spot. It wasn't recording. And that's the point at which I hit record. So I didn't even get to see the bulk of the Raiders Hit Row match, but there wasn't much to it, my understanding.
I can't say there was a bulk to it. It was only 2 minutes and 44 seconds. So
yeah,
if you saw any at all, you probably saw a good percentage of it. Viking Raiders go over with Ragnarok. It seems like between that and Sarah Logan coming back, they are trying something with these guys. So a bit of a reclamation project here.
Yeah, Hit Row. I mean, what did you imagine them doing and how are they doing and what do you think their future is?
Hit Row with Swerve was so awesome. I love Swerve. He is one of my absolute favorite wrestlers. Every aspect of what he does, I just absolutely adore. And I miss him being on NXT. I miss him even being in this company. I don't stay that on top of AEW, so I don't see a lot of Swerve.
Yeah.
It turns out that Hit Row without Swerve kind of falls flat. It's tough seeing Top Dollar really, really try to get that who better than Top Dollar not a thing over, and it never gets a massive reaction. They were so good as backup, as cronies of Swerve. And now it just seems like we've got this faction that is desperately in need of a leader and does not have one. I think they're perfectly fine in the ring as a big small. But yeah, if they went through the trouble to rehire these three so they could lose sub 3 minute matches, I don't know what the reasoning is.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to go back to Ricochet Braun a little bit, just because I think we brushed over that. Did you like the story that they told with that dynamic and how it all ended up? Because I thought it was a successful, you know, kind of just, you know, quick, couple, you know, 2 week storyline built into a tournament that led to an organic teaming up that then is going to lead to some follow up. So yeah, just your thoughts, expanded thoughts on that.
Yeah, I thought that this was successful in a lot of different ways, and it's always amazed me that throughout tournaments, WWE finds things that you didn't expect to be part of that tournament at all, whether that be a pairing or a matchup or something like it. It just seems like they're non-one-night tournaments. There's always intrigue and something you don't expect, and that was no different here. So, yeah, and I know we touched on this stuff about, hey, now they can just say that it was an act all along. But I really thought they used that well. And I really think that Ricochet and Braun as a team could actually be more than the sum of their parts, because they both have a tendency to flounder on their own, but they have a fun, weird, unexpected dynamic that I really think could work as a team. And I don't know how long-term I would think that would be, but I think they could do that for a while.
Yeah, cool. All right. We can wrap up there. And I just encourage you all to check out Wrestling Night in America tomorrow night. Greg Parks hosting live on the PW Torch Daily Cast. We'll have a link to the live stream that'll follow Survivor Series in my TV report at the top and bottom of, or excuse me, my PLE report at the top and bottom of my PLE report at pwtorch.com. So I'll be covering Survivor Series live on Saturday night. And then Greg Parks will be hosting the post show with live callers, and you can be one of them. So I encourage you to do that. Kelly, tell people about your shows and how they can listen and read more from you.
That is PWT Talks NXT every Wednesday about 20 minutes after NXT ends. Nate Lindberg, Bruce Hazelwood, and I are the regulars there. But it seems like of late, between kids and other things, it's been a two-man booth more often than not. But we do that every Wednesday. I write the recap along with Bruce. We kind of rotate there. And NXT 8 years Back is a VIP show where Tom Staup and I look back at NXT in its kind of formative years as a brand. We're not looking at the game show because,
yeah.
But we're looking back at the other stuff. And that's, it's been a lot of fun seeing a lot of these things for the second time, seeing things I agree with, things that I like more now than then, and a few things I like less now than I did then. But it's all, there's always something to talk about there. We were also seeing Becky versus Bayley in those days too. We're just past the first time that we got to see those two against each other, and the very first time against each other, they were pretty good. So they kind of had it figured out pretty early, those two. But you can hear us talk about that and about movies on VIP.
Yes. Come for the wrestling, stay for the movies. Kelly, thanks so much. Real pleasure having you on.
Always good to be here. Love doing SmackDown, and I'll see you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend.